On this episode, Sean Fiorito and I discuss the AngularJS learning curve and why he thinks it's so nasty. Welcome to the Frontend Developer Cast, the podcast that helps developers be awesome at building ambitious web applications. Whether you're a JavaScript ninja or you're just getting started, I'm your host, Craig McKeachy. Hi, everyone. My interview today is with Sean Fiorito, and we discuss the AngularJS learning curve and why he thinks it's so nasty and how he goes about making it easier to learn. We also discuss Angular in the enterprise and why he thinks AngularJS is great when you're dealing with large enterprise code bases. Let's get into the interview. Hey, today I'm lucky enough to have Sean Fiorito with me. He's the author of Sketching with CSS, which you may have heard about throughout the internets, and has more recently been focused on doing some AngularJS training. That's why I wanted to have him on the front end podcast here. Welcome, Sean.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me.
I also heard that you perhaps may have been lacking some sleep recently. Is that true?
Yeah. If I randomly forget words or get words mixed up in the middle of this, it's definitely sleep deprivation. We just had a kid, Isaac. He's our first. He's 4 weeks old yesterday.
I do remember those times, so I will try to edit out any of those parts where, you know, you forget entire sentences or things like that. So I feel for you.
It's hard to keep track of anything. It feels like one long blurred day since since we got back from the hospital.
Well, congratulations, you know.
Thank you.
And I wish you luck in getting out of this time.
Yeah.
Surviving. Maybe that's
better. I heard 6 weeks is like the magic. Everybody keeps telling me 6 weeks, it gets a little bit better then. So I'm just crossing my fingers. And don't tell me that that's not true.
Right. You know what I wish people would have told me? My sons are now 5 and 8. My one's going into kindergarten. But long story short, I wish people would have said, it does get easier. Because I kind of like, it's pretty hard when they're young. And I wish somebody would have said, yes, it's going to get easier, but they all just kind of look at me like, you know, it'll be okay. You'll get through this. But they wouldn't say it's going to get easier because that's what I really wanted to hear at the time. So I'm telling you, it's going to get easier. So
good. Thank you.
Anyway, so we're going to talk Angular today. So one thing that was interesting when we were kind of chatting back and forth was you were talking about the Angular learning curve, and I was definitely concurring and remembering the early days, which wasn't so long ago for me either, of learning Angular. Tell me what your experience has been like with that.
Well, I mean, in addition to it being tough for me to pick up Angular, and I'm an experienced developer. I've been doing this for a really long time, and I've been doing JavaScript for 6 years and working with really big, gnarly enterprise JavaScript code bases. So I'm comfortable picking up new frameworks, new technologies. But Angular was particularly tough, and it's tough for everybody. It's like kind of the common denominator, which quite frankly is one of the reasons why I'm doing, you know, Angular training, just because there's so many people that it's the learning curve in Angular is particularly vicious. So it'd be nice if somebody, you know, kind of bundled up the hard bits, pulled it together and like made some sense of it and cut the time down to learn it. The thing about Angular, I think that was tough. Of course, it goes to their documentation, which is better now than it was in the past. And I actually evaluated Angular years ago. And one of the reasons I kind of just dismissed it was, well, A, it was a little weird because there was all this like code in the markup, and that just, and I was at a Microsoft shop and I really hated ASPXs and like, you know, they're all the problems that we'd had with putting a bunch of code in views. And I was like, that's just weird. And I don't want to look at it. Plus it looked really Microsofty, and I was kind of rebelling against the Microsofty stuff at the time. So
right.
I thought,
I think a lot of people were burnt by you know, various tags that Microsoft created, including like data source tags.
Yep.
That,
exactly.
You know, it's like, oh, this is a good idea to put your database code in your view. So we can say we've written 0 lines of code. You know, we've written a lot of lines of markup, but 0 lines of code. And people sort of still are stung by that and remembering this is not a good thing necessarily, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, there was so much magic behind some of those things, and it would just do surprising things and have surprising effects down the line. You know, you get something working fast and then you're like, oops.
Right.
Now, like, we don't know what's happening. Or, you know, worse. I mean, a lot of shops have, you know, a lot of inexperienced developers working at them, and that was, you know, our company was no different in that respect. And so, like, you know, there's a lot of code being written without oversight and, you know, things are getting used incorrectly. And it's real tricky when you have that. A level of abstraction is scary to me anymore. So I've always kind of recoiled when I see something like that. And so Angular was no different. You know, you look at that, the first kind of Hello World example, and it's like, what is that? That looks iffy.
Right.
it's not like that, it turns out. But and then the other problem was that when I was looking at it way back then was the docs were just ridiculous. They're pointless.
When you said they've gotten better, I definitely think, you know, not that the training such as my book and your training are still much needed in this space because it's a complicated topic. But the funny thing about it is I remember they used to have comments at the bottom of the documentation. And it was like going back to before Stack Overflow or wherever, where you'd have to read through seven people's comments to actually get the answer to the documentation that you read. So I that was just hilarious. But they seem to have cleaned a lot of that up. It was sometimes like infuriating, but sometimes it was really actually funny. Like if depending on your mood, you know, you would actually think it was funny. And then sometimes you just get mad and say, this is ridiculous, right? Just depending on my mood anyway. So
yeah, no, totally true. And the docs were truly terrible. They're infamous actually for being so bad, but they're better now. The problem is they're not, in my opinion, they're not better in a useful way. I mean, they're
not pragmatic or practical
for learning. They're not better for learning Angular. So it's still a terrible place to start off when you're learning Angular. So that's kind of a big mistake to start at the docs if you're learning Angular. They're really comprehensive now, which is great. I mean, there's still parts. I've still even, you know, recently found myself looking at code to figure out what was actually happening. But they're good enough, you know, to investigate, you know, a built-in directive and see what you can do with it, that sort of thing. And that's good. The problem is they document really well what is happening, but not why they do anything. So they're totally missing a lot of context. And when you're trying to learn something like Angular that has a lot of potentially, depending on, you know, your experience or background or whatever, a lot of strange new concepts, you know, like dependency injection, for example, it's like the first time you see dependency injection, which is what happened to me, I looked at it and I was like, I kept reading through, you know, the basic Hello World application, and I kept seeing examples of all of a sudden they're including different parameters in these functions. And I'm like, where did that even come from? How can you even do that? You can't just change the API of a function like that,
right.
arbitrarily. And there is no explanation for it. And, you know, Angular has a lot of gotchas like that. And the other thing that they totally screw up, in my opinion, I shouldn't say that, like the purpose of the docs isn't to get you from, you know, A to B in learning, but even their tutorials that they have also fail to do this, is they gloss over this, what I think is the most important thing about Angular, and that it's really a very modular framework, and it's all designed around creating directives. You have to know about directives and like how to make them and how most of the basic built-in directives work. Otherwise, you're going to be in trouble really, really fast, and it's just going to be confusing really, really fast. And that's kind of the pitfall, I think, that a lot of people get stuck in Angular, is you start off just using the built-in directives without really knowing, you know, like, how does ng-bind work? How do those little like curly braces work? What's the digest loop? You know, without any knowledge of how that works. And you can get pretty far with an Angular app that way without knowing what's going on. But pretty quickly, you run into trying to think through, like, where should I put my code? Like, how should I organize this Angular app? And then you run into performance problems because you don't understand the digest loop and like how many watches you have when you're using ng-repeat, stuff like that. So most of the problems I see that people run into with Angular, like the most common questions, comes from this failure, at least of Angular, to peel apart the more modular, the components that it's made of, and explain like the philosophy of Angular and like how you should be able to use, you know, watches, and how you should be able to use directives and create your own almost like declarative language in your markup. And that's the power of it. No tutorials that I know of, except for mine, actually start there with those core components. So right. That's, in my opinion, the Angular learning curve is right there, because you can get so far with the built-in directives without knowing what's going on, and they encourage that.
Right, and you take a more foundational approach, it sounds like, where, you know, what is a directive? How do you build one from scratch? And then, oh, here's something that already is a directive that they've built into the framework, and now you have a better understanding sort of from the core of how that works. That's a great approach.
Right, exactly. You got to understand the digest loop. You have to understand watches. You have to understand injector. You have to understand, you know, how Angular pulls all these things together and how to create a directive. Like, those are the key things. As soon as you get that, then it's kind of like all the problems that you see people running into, you kind of understand why and you could figure it out yourself.
So how do you like to think about the digest loop? Can you elaborate on how you think about it, how you finally grok that concept?
So the first time you encounter Angular updating the page automatically, you're like, how is it doing that?
Right.
So I've created frameworks like this in the past at my company, little mini frameworks that I made for myself to create prototypes really quickly. And also to sort of like help push my managers into a more modern approach for building our web applications to help us eventually solve some of the problems we were having with our large JavaScript code base. So I built a few things like this before, and the way I'd done it was like basically intervals, or I'd done it with like special models where you have to inherit from a model and then you have special getters and setters. And like, I wasn't seeing anything like that in Angular, or I was thinking maybe there's an interval, like maybe they're like, you know, continuous polling my data in the background, but I still have no idea, you know, how that's actually happening. It just looks like I have a regular JavaScript object. I was like, so
how,
it's really,
how are they getting the data in your model to bind to the UI is what you're really getting at. Like, how's this magic
yes.
happening basically?
Yeah, exactly. Right? And you know, so like, a really simple way of doing it would be, you know, if you were to implement it yourself, for example, if you wanted to have this notion of whenever I update my data model, my view knows about it. How do you do that? Well, you could do that by having special setters on your model, on all of your models. So anytime you change it, you have to use the special setter, and that way it actually updates the view. And in fact, this is how I explained it in my class as well. Like, okay, Angular is not doing that. So how are they doing it? And the way they do it is pretty cool. Like, in my opinion, I would never have thought of this, but it's, you know, the notion of dirty checking, which, by the way, I don't know, am I going to be explaining something that everybody knows here, or
you know,
is this of interest?
I don't think so. I think this is a podcast for people who are, you know, new to the framework, or for, you know, people who are deep in it. And it just depends on which episode you listen to, you know,
Okay.
The kind of stuff you get. And I think even people who've used Angular quite a bit, at least in my opinion, it's always nice to hear from a different perspective, like, you know, the digest cycle or watches described a different way. Because when you understand, you know, if you think back through your programming career, if you've been there a while, some of the best sort of teachers that I've ever seen or whatever usually go to a very low level. Like, I can remember when .NET first came out, someone taking a Hello World app that was just console.writeline. It was actually Jeffrey Richter, who's famous for writing very low level books on C#. And he just sort of spent the time in this user group I saw him at with ILDASM looking at, you know, how it was rewriting the bytecode and so forth. And I think at some point, you don't really need to know that, but it's like you need to understand it. And once you understand it, then a lot of things become easier to troubleshoot and so forth. So I love this kind of stuff. Sorry for the tangent, but I like this kind of stuff. So,
well, okay. So I think that you do absolutely need to know how the magic works. And that's the thing that I like about Angular, is that there's a lot of magic, but it's really straightforward how it actually works. So it's kind of like, you're wasting your time if you don't bother to figure it out. Like, it's better to just figure it out, because it's not that complicated. And that's the case with the digest loop. It's kind of like this awesome idea that, you know, when a JavaScript app, when nothing is happening, nothing is happening. Like, you don't need to be checking to see if anything is updating. There are only like a couple times where you need to see if something changed. Like when there's an event, or like an asynchronous callback, you know, from an AJAX call, or like a set timeout or set interval. Those are kind of the only times where you need to actually see if anything in your model changed, to see if you need to update the view. And then, of course, as the developer, you know the pieces of your model that are bound to the view. So what Angular does is give you then an explicit way to say, okay, these are the things that could change. And then every time any one of these events happen, where something could have changed, check to see if it changed. So basically, you set these watches and you say, watch this value on this object and say, anytime something happens where it could have changed, check to see if it changed. So Angular remembers what the previous value was. And then anytime it hits one of these events, it goes through, it's called the digest loop, and checks through all the watches that you set up. It's really that's it. So
right.
And that's what's happening with the, you know, with those built-in directives with ng-bind, with the curly braces, is that's all they did, is they set up a watch. They're using that built-in functionality. And the reason that you need to know about the digest loop if you're using Angular is because eventually your code is going to leave Angular, and then what's going to happen is your model will update, but then the view won't. And if you don't know what's going on, you won't have any way to figure out how to fix that. If you know that this digest loop has to run and you have to trigger it yourself, then you know, like, okay, I've got to wrap stuff that leaves Angular and an apply call or something like that.
Right. That's right. It's when you get into directives that you have to sort of understand how to hook yourself properly into that
sure.
digest loop.
Or you're talking to, you know, a third party, like an API, or you're working with another service or something like that, and that leaves Angular land, then yeah, all of a sudden, you know, the code that was all neatly tucked away in your controller, which, you know, that always gets executed when it's first loaded inside of that bootstrap function that happens at the beginning of every Angular loading, and whenever an Angular app loads, like, as soon as you leave that, you're not inside a digest loop, so Angular has no idea that anything, it doesn't even know to check to see if something changed. You have to tell it to. Which, you know, it's like, it sort of takes away the magic a little bit, because it was like, whoa, Angular is super cool. And then I'm like, oh, that's all I have to do is just tell it that something changed and tell it to watch something. Yeah. But, you know, you use those built-in directives. And again, it's like, if you don't know how they work, you can get into trouble really fast.
No, that was good. That's great. That's a good explanation of that. One other thing that we've been talking about is sort of Angular and the enterprise. And, you know, when we're discussing things, you're saying, hey, it's a pretty good matchup from my experience with these larger code bases, like the one you mentioned before as a JavaScript framework. Can you explain, like, some of the things that were sort of missing in your code bases, in these larger code bases, JavaScript code bases, that Angular's filling in that you wish you always had Angular, basically?
Yeah. So the basic, I guess, to start, when you're creating like an MVC web application, you know, most of your stuff is happening server side. You generate a template, you make a call, and then it renders the template, returns the markup, you insert it somewhere in the page. And as long as you're willing to do a full page reload, that's fine. It starts to get weird when all of a sudden, you know, you want to do stuff without doing a full page reload, or without like rewriting an entire section of the document. What a lot of people do, and what we did for the longest time, was, you know, we had, I was going to say jQuery, but we didn't have jQuery actually at my company. They used UE2, which is hilarious. But so anyway, they used their, you know, JavaScript framework or library that they had.
It's funny that you said UE. I don't know if I've ever heard somebody say UE before. I'm sure that's what everybody calls it, but I've never heard it pronounced, I don't think, you know.
Maybe not. So maybe that's just how they said it there, because nobody uses it. So how are you supposed to know, like, how other people say it,
right? It's not, and it's not a name like jQuery. So
no,
it's
exactly.
The YUI library is the UE guy, right? That's what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yahoo's JavaScript library, which way back in the day before jQuery was, you know, the de facto standard, was a contender. And that's when they were picking libraries. So they were a little ahead of the curve with the JavaScript library stuff and doing, you know, client-side stuff, but a little too far ahead of the curve, because they bet on the wrong horse in that case.
Right.
So what you start doing is you start adding more complexity and more interactions on your page. And I was the JavaScript guy at this company. I was like the front end guy, and they would, you know, go to me to get these, you know, interactions working that they wanted. Mm-hmm. And it was really tough working with the system the way they had it set up, because when I asked the server for stuff, I'd get back markup instead of data. And what I really wanted was, I needed some data. Like, I needed objects to work with. So I found myself a lot of times, you know, writing code that where I would like dig through the document and look for the state of the document there, because it was, not only does the server return like actual model data, mm-hmm. which, you know, is actually rendered, but there's also this like extra state in an application, especially a single page application, which is the, I don't want to call it view state, because that's got some Microsoft connotations, but you know what I mean? Like, there's like the user interface state where it's
the view,
like,
model, some people call it scope and Angular,
like,
right?
What's showing, well, and I mean at a more abstract level, actually, like, what's showing right now and why? And
okay. And
at that layer, what I found was really frustrating for me was that sort of knowledge of, like, okay, should this menu be dropped down? Should this be highlighted? Should, because there was, in this application that we had, there was all kinds of code like that where it's like, if they've done these four things, then they should see these three things over here. And that's not your model state. That's not like product specs. That's like state that's happened and built up over time with of the user interacting with your application. Where does that live? In my case, that state lived most of the time in classes, CSS classes, you know, that were added into the markup. So then, you know, I ended up writing a lot of code where I'm like scraping the DOM and like finding like what state certain elements are in. You know, of course, I hated that. I did not like that state living in the DOM. So I'd pull it out and I, you know, try and keep and maintain like a little separate JavaScript object where then I would use that to do my like application logic. And I started being like, why are we doing this? This is like a waste of time. Why don't you just have the server return JSON? I'll render the markup client side based on the data that I get back from the server plus what the user has been doing. And then all I have to do is like, I've got this cleaner JavaScript code where I'm just updating, you know, my pure JavaScript objects, which, you know, are much easier to work with. There's no HTML scraping. I don't care. There is no longer any data that I care about in the DOM. Once we hit that point in the complexity of the application where it became a no-brainer for me, and for, you know, at least I always figured at that company that we should be rendering our markup client side, which is, I never actually managed to convince them to do anything of reasonable size using that approach, even though I've been pushing for that for like 5 years.
Right. And if you like, sort of half commit to something too, it's hard to get there, right? Like, so if you would get some JSON calls back, but you know, the whole app isn't structured thinking, you know, in that architected in that way, right, then it becomes even, you know, not that you couldn't take an app and slice it into three or four single page apps, but if you're not at least committing, you stepping over the line and starting to commit that way, then you're fighting it quite a bit.
I mean,
right?
What pushed them over the edge, because I think since I've left, they actually have some Angular running there, which is funny. It was that they had an iPad app and they wanted to, you know, reuse a bunch of the stuff that they wrote for the web application. Of course, the managers were like, well, we already wrote all that code on the server. You just use it in your iPad app. But, you know, it's like returning markup with like, that really is it like several steps away from the data that you need to actually get into your iPad app, right?
Right.
So it's like, obviously, you need something portable across both systems. So they ended up writing, you know, I think separate layer where they could return, ask for JSON if they wanted instead of HTML. And this company was even crazier because they had an entire, they called it a layout engine, like server side. So markup in the browser that was returned was actually, they would render it in multiple different resolutions and formats to try and get the best fit for the screen on the server and then generate markup in CSS to spit back the view. So you can imagine like, okay, you're working on the iPad team and their managers are telling you, use this call, you know, which goes through our layout engine and like builds up this HTML, and somehow you're supposed to use that insanely brutal code to like get data out of. It was the same problem I ran into with the JavaScript. It was just the iPad team was, you know, a lot more high profile than me trying to get little front end stuff working.
right. It's like, get the iPad app done. It needs to be out
tomorrow.
Yeah, but
it's exact same problem, right? It's like, you know, this is why I think Angular's taken off. And I don't know why Angular in particular. There are a lot of frameworks, but it's definitely Angular is seems to be killing everybody right now. Probably because of this, because they're saying, really, you're building apps. And if you have apps on multiple platforms, like iPad or mobile, and then you've got also your web app that you need to build, then it just, your server gradually, that's obviously going to start turning into, you know, just something that's returning simple JSON, just data.
Right. Cool. So I think that was a good description of some of the problems. You know, the one thing you didn't mention, but I'm sure you felt, is the whole influence of the router and the back button and that sort of thing.
So we implemented our own version of that at this company. Yeah, and like having the ability to do that in Angular, that would have, yes, the way that they ended up doing it there was truly terrible, and it was one of the buggiest things that we wrote, actually. Yeah, so the fact that Angular lets you do that is, you know, makes that much more organized, I guess, is much better. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to steal the thunder there, but I just...
No, that's a good point. I forgot about that. Yeah.
It's been my big pain point. Sometimes I'd write a page and, you know, return HTML to my jQuery or whatever and think I was saving all this time. And then, you know, somebody be testing the app and hit the back button and it wouldn't work. And, yep. you know, and then you're like kind of stuck. You're just like, wait, what am I going to do now? Kind of thing. So, you know, this is the front end developer cast. So maybe we should take a quick second too to talk about sketching with CSS in case it matches up with anyone's interests.
It may or may not. So sketching with CSS, I wrote that for web designers who are coming from a Photoshop background. So it's kind of like, okay, if you're trying to leapfrog from doing Photoshop design to designing in the browser is what they call it, then it's basically all the front end tools that, you know, a front end developer uses to create the designs that they used to, that they were doing in Photoshop before. You know, how would you go about doing that in the browser? And that's, it's all the tools that you would need there. And that's not going to be anything that an experienced front end developer, there's not going to be a lot new in there. So basically the less experience you have, the more value you get out of the Sketching with CSS book. Then my Angular training is for learning Angular, and that's it. So it's just like jumping this learning curve we talked a little bit about at the beginning of the podcast. And that's my website is planningforaliens.com, and the Angular training is at training.planningforaliens.com/Angular, and that's where that is.
Okay. Well, thanks again for taking the time to come on the show. I wish you luck with the newborn, and
thank you.
Keep in touch.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Frontend Developer Podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast by going to the iTunes store on your phone or desktop, then searching for Frontend, or via RSS by going to frontendcast.com, where you'll also find show notes and a full transcript of each episode. If you haven't already, please take the time to check out my book, The JavaScript Framework Guide, AngularJS, Backbone, Ember, Confidently Choosing and Quickly Learning, by going to javascriptframeworkguide.com. Thanks. We'll see you next time.